Okay, well, let's go ahead and get started. Okay, so we'll go ahead and call the Monterey Bay Air Resources District Board to order. And with that, we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Director Friend, you ready? Thank you very much. And you want to proceed with roll call? Here. 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 Excellent. Thank you. Well, I know that we have at least one member of the public that's thrilled to be here, came all the way down from Santa Cruz County. So this is our opportunity for public comment. Anyone from the public that would love to address the board, now's your chance. We're going to limit you to 3 minutes. So
I'll ask for a couple of minutes afterwards.
Maybe we'll give you four. How's that? And we can always certainly visit afterwards. We'd really love that. So, okay, so you're on, sir.
You guys monitor air pollution, and it's coming out of the CO2s of the exhaust pipe. I'm going to ask you guys, I'll give you a little plan that works. It works all over the country. If you look it up, it's called road space rationing. You guys monitor, but your state legislatures are not doing what they need to be doing in getting rid of traffic congestion, and of course the CO2s that come out of it, and meet Fran Pavley's goal of in 10 years to get rid of the CO2s a 40% reduction. But they don't have a plan. Their plan is going to be congestion pricing. You're going to pay to drive, yet drive, and you're still going to pollute. So this road space rationing that's being, look it up, Google it. It's being done all over many cities in the world. So you'll look that up, you'll see that it's happening, you'll see that they have also congestion pricing, but you still drive. Your job is to get rid of air pollution. So this is out a little bit outside of you, but you can suggest, and it'll bear a lot more weight than me, because I'm not getting anywhere with these state legislators, except for Senator Ben Allen down south. He said that he submitted it to Metro for study, LA Metro. LA Metro is going to be, that plan is going to be competing with congestion pricing by the Mayor Garcetti. So I'm going to suggest that after you look up the saliency of practical out of this plan, that you submit to your state legislatures, Stone and Mawning, that they get onto this plan, because we have an important issue. And it's gotten to be CO2s. Before that, it was traffic congestion. We're not going anywhere. And what this plan does is take equitably people, drivers, off the road on a categorically way. We have to take, there's just too many cars on the road. And basically the way it works, when you get your, with the exception of those vehicles registered in the non-congested areas of the state, and more particularly commercial licensed vehicles and handicapped, when you get your vehicle registration, and every vehicle registered at this particular address, so they don't game the system as they do in Mexico City. I'll repeat that. Every vehicle registered at a particular address gets the same no drive day. The remainder, when they get their vehicle registration, it designates a no drive day like Monday. The next one, the next address is Tuesday. DMV can handle this. It doesn't cost any money. And what do they do on that no-drive day? Well, we unfortunately, that's where we're at, congestion. They're going to go into mass transit. We're going to get more money for mass transit, get a bus out here, because this is a big issue. And I can ramble on. I don't know what I want to say, but that's the plan. It's a simple plan. It doesn't cost anything, and it can be done expeditiously, quickly. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. Any other members of the public wishing to address the board on items not on the agenda? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on to reports by our various committees. We did not have a budget, personnel, and nominating committee meeting, so there's no report. Rich, is there an advisory committee report?
Mr. Chair, no, the advisory committee did not meet this month.
Okay. So then we'll move on to comments and referrals from any of the board members. Okay, so we'll move on to our report from Rich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. First off, I'd like to give some good news. We just had our audit exit meeting this morning, and we're going to have another clean audit. And this is especially important because Joyce left us right before the audit began, and Rosa had to take it over, and she's new at this, and so it's extremely challenging. But she came through. Her trial by fire continues here. But she's doing really well and not getting too singed. So I'd like to thank Rosa and her staff for all their assistance on that. The board will be seeing a final draft of the month of December. October has been a really busy month for the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association. We had a number of different meetings. The first was a compliance symposium that was held in Sacramento, and it was useful to our new inspectors for inspections, report writing, and other topics. Teresa Sewell and Sean Boyle of our staff presented at the symposium. There's also an engineering symposium that's held up in Folsom. Covered a wide range of topics from composting to cannabis to toxics. And we had one of our engineers, Meng Meng, present at the symposium as well. We just got through having a vape recovery meeting in our office here, so members throughout the state came here, and our staff member, Bronwyn, did an excellent job coordinating and ensuring that that meeting went off without a hitch. And then lastly, I'd like you to know, every year we have the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association, or CAPCOA, membership meeting in Monterey, and that will be happening here over several days in the last week of October. And then this morning we had a hearing board meeting for variance at UC Santa Cruz to operate natural gas fired emergency generators for a short period of time while the power shut off to install and test solar panels at their substation. So this is a price they're going to pay. It was approved, but they're going to go solar, so they needed a way to provide energy during that installation period. And then, of course, you guys have all heard of the PSPS, that's the power safety, power shutoff that PG&E has done, especially if you're up in Santa Cruz County. This, unfortunately, has caused an increased demand for generators. A lot of these folks are looking to stores, for instance, anybody that has perishable products, they're going to need some kind of backup. Now, unfortunately, the emergency generator market's pretty tight, and there's not a lot of compliant engines out there. So it looks like the state is going to sort of open up to rent folks the ability to rent engines from out of state. So we'll see they're going to be, in this district in particular, we're going to see an increase in permitting activities associated with generators now that the first PSPS has happened. Planning and air monitoring, phase two of the Monterey Bay Electric Vehicle Incentive Program is off and running, started on August 1st, and to date we have had about 80 applications, so that's really good news. Last month, Envision Solar, in cooperation with Caltrans, installed two DC fast chargers equipped with solar panels and battery backup at Camp Roberts rest areas, South County, Monterey. This was funded by District's Plug-in Monterey Bay Program, AB 923, And then there are also additional dollars from Caltrans. And we've also given some supplemental monies to install trenching and trickling power to the battery. So in case of inclement weather, so this will hopefully increase the capacity for charging at those rest stops. We're probably going to put a sign on the stop itself to say, don't drink all the water while you're here, because, you know, if somebody can potentially drain a battery and all the solar power charge in a couple of cars. So we want people to use this as sort of a watering pool to get to their next destination to charge their vehicle. San Lorenzo Valley, that's that time of year again. Our PM 2.5 seasonal monitors have been installed in preparation for the wintertime use of wood stoves and fireplaces. So once again, these are located in Felton, Zayante, Boulder Creek Fire Departments and the CAL FIRE headquarters in Felton. And we'll also be starting our wintertime Spare the Air program, which will launch on November 1st. Staff will observe weather conditions and air quality in the San Lorenzo Valley to forecast when a Spare the Air alert will be declared. And this asks for residents to voluntarily choose devices that use other types of fuels other than wood to heat their home. And this typically runs through spring when the conditions for smoke dispersion improve. We also have the annual San Lorenzo Valley Student Art Contest, which started in September. The contest teaches students how to use wood-burning stoves and fireplaces correctly and how they affect air quality. And this year's theme is Wood Smoke Affects Us All. And this is run by the Valley Women's Club and sponsored by Bruce McPherson's office in the district. And we'll be presenting awards at the San Lorenzo Valley School District Board meeting on November 20th. With respect to outreach activities, we participated in a number of events this past month. The Drive Electric Weeks in Santa Cruz and Monterey and Clean Energy Forum in Seaside, thank you, Director McShane, have placed air quality treks, which you saw a demonstration of the monitors with a Hartnell teacher. And also we'll be working with the Steinbeck Center to use the air quality treks, particulate air monitors and curriculum in their summer program out there. So we're getting the word out about monitoring and air quality. We're also going to be working with Caltrans and are working with Caltrans in a marketing firm on the Camp Roberts Solar EV ribbon cutting, tentatively scheduled for sometime during the week of November 11th. We'll let you guys know in case you want to attend. This is the one we're trying to get all three governors, Brown, Schwarzenegger, and Newsom to attend. I think that Schwarzenegger has dropped off that list, but it would be nice. I think he's been invited at least. We'll be at Hartnell College next week for an open house for their advanced diesel technology program. We're also working with E-Lion on a ribbon cutting on November 12th to welcome and delivery of electric school buses to several districts in the region. That's Live Oak and San Cruz, Gonzales, and in Salinas. And that concludes my remarks. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Well, it's up to the board's pleasure. I think I agreed to have it in January, and I didn't do that on purpose because we don't meet in January. So we could probably do it earlier in November or in February. The longer we wait, the more accurate data we have. But we can provide a presentation on the existing data we currently have.
February might be better.
Maybe wait a little while.
Two reasons. I'm also wondering if, as part of that presentation, we can have a conversation about the public safety power shutoffs. Obviously, that industry was severe in the past with Santa Rosa and Napa, that the location of their facility was due to the shutoffs. And I know that a lot of folks got in generators, some not in legal ways, and I think it's going to take time for those stories to come out and for us to be able to come out. not properly addressed. I would like to hear what impacted in the Salinas Valley with this latest round. But I do know that it could be. So if we could roll those two conversations in the deciding issue and we have stakeholders in the room, that would be great. February would be a little easier to get folks in if we're still a little bit more fresh.
Why don't we follow up with the question? Perhaps it's better suited as a community meeting where, you know, the hour and time could be set up, it could almost be a discussion rather than a formal agenda item where more stakeholders are able to be at the table and be directed towards being invited. Something you could speak creatively or not here, but we definitely, in the past, if the items come up, you know, you get one or two representatives from the industry. I think we want to make sure that there's better discussion.
Right, and that's part of the, I think, the problem here is a lot of people are, I think, speaking out of turn. They think they're regulated by us, but they aren't. And so that's one of the issues. I will say, too, later on this month, CAPCOA will be holding a briefing session in Lodi. I'm not sure if I'll attend yet. They're more interested in Santa Barbara. The Santa Barbara County APCD has one of the most restrictive wine rules in the state, and that requires mandatory controls through best available control technology. So we'll be meeting, CAPCO will be meeting with the authors of the previously sponsored bill to discuss some of the issues around wineries, and the Wine Institute will be there. Yeah, that's part of the other issue is that we're not sure the Wine Institute really speaks for the county folks. I've heard that time and time again, that they seem to be more concerned with the what's going on in the Central Valley, San Joaquin, and other areas. And some of those issues aren't as prominent here. But certainly we're reaching out to Kim Stemmler and been talking to the Monterey growers and vintners as well. So.
With as much notice, maybe even someone from the state could be invited. Just kick it around, right? It's a big enough issue. It's come up a couple of times. Legislation got kicked for the next year. It could have been a bit bigger issue than we might have to do. And I don't think it's going away.
Well, it's not going away, and that's part of the education, too, is that there's no law that can be written that's going to obviate the need or requirements under federal and state law. I mean, you can't erase that. So I think it's just folks have to sit down and be reasonable in their discussions. So I'd be happy to postpone that until February.
Cool. I do have a question regarding this. I know Chris asked this question. But, so are those rules standards about the state, or is it very county by county?
Yes. So just really quickly, we stand out as very restrictive here because, and I don't know the reasoning behind this, but typically state law says you can only emit 25 tons per year of a particular pollutant. Well, this district went one step further and said, we're going to break it down to a daily emission of 165 pounds. So not only do we have the annual limit, so you could do all your harvesting and wine making in a few months and you'd still be under the cap. Because we have a daily limit, it's really very difficult with wine storage operations and the wine making operations. They'll go over that cap unless they find offsets, which is really good. I mean, that's one thing I sort of wish wine would just sort of own up to the fact that they're a really huge emission source and they should do their part to clean the air. And it's, I think one study in Santa Barbara showed that it would be 3 cents per bottle of an increase in cost. So, I think once again, we're sort of talking past one another too. And we just need to sort of show that we're trying to be more realistic. So the wine industry would like us to say, well, just take that 165 tons off your or pounds off your books. We can't do that. It's codified. It would be considered backsliding, and there's an anti-backsliding law. So we're sort of stuck with that. We could get the California Air Resources Board to come down here and hold a hearing to determine that that's no longer necessary. I wouldn't want to be a winery to present that to the board to say we want to admit more than Santa Barbara County says is feasible. So it's a tough nut to crack, but I think there is an answer out of in speaking to one another and recognizing that there are unique differences among the districts. I will say this, that the Bay Area now, which everybody complains that all the wine's going up there to be made, their district now is writing rules to deal with the wine industry because they've realized it's a huge source of volatile emissions. So San Luis Obispo, not so much. Santa Barbara, they have really very strict rules for enforcement. So it varies, just like the water varies throughout the state. There's different conditions for all these different types of operations. So yes is the answer. They're all different.
Any other questions for? Okay, so seeing none, we go on to our consent agenda. So is there anybody that would like to pull an item from the consent agenda? Seeing none, public? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve the consent agenda? Moved and seconded. Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We'll go on to our regular agenda. We have one item. Rich?
Okay, so this is it'll be a presentation that I gave last week, actually, to the American Bar Association. It was a nationally televised webinar, and did it on behalf of the National Association of Clean Air Agencies, but also since I'm one of the California members that are on the board, it sort of fell to me to do some research, and we just sent a letter to EPA basically talking about how we're not happy with the proposed changes under the Clean Air Act and taking away California's waiver to regulate vehicle emissions here in the state. So this is an important, I think, presentation to know. It gives us some historical perspective on what's going on and has gone on in California and where we may go in the future. Before I do this, I'll cut to the end and say that after this is done, California submitted an eight-page letter to US EPA, basically saying you were very wrong in your letter to us, which I provided to the board, which said that EPA was considering withholding the highway transportation funds from California, and that we had not met our obligation under the Clean Air Act, and we were one of the dirtiest states in the nation with respect to air quality, and we weren't doing our job. To my knowledge, no other state or jurisdiction has received this type of letter. And we know, for instance, that Texas has even worse air quality problems. They have at least 25 counties with over 40 violations of national ambient air quality standards. So, and in the letter, it cited all these backlogs of state implementation plans that were submitted by districts to the state. Well, it turns out that the districts have processed that through the state, and they have been turned over to EPA. This is EPA's backlog, not the state's. So all the criticism sort of directed towards California actually should be directed towards to the EPA, US EPA. And of course, Mary Nichols, the chair of the California Air Resources Board, made those arguments rather well and eloquently, and I have a copy of the letter if anybody would like that. I can send that out just through email as well, but it's very informative. And then there's another story right after that almost 600 former EPA officials from all administrations, Republican and Democrat, have signed a letter in regards to the letter that was sent by Administrator Wheeler to California saying they've never seen, and it's just inappropriate, and that California has led the nation in air quality improvement efforts, and they actually have paved the way for EPA, and that's also made a point made by Mary Nichols in her letter. Anyway, so you see a lot's happening. Also, we may have another investigation of the administration that was specifically called out in a letter I sent to you from Dianne Feinstein, which requires asking the Inspector General to see if any other states have received such a letter threatening, the withholding of transportation funds. And ironically, this comes at a time they're saying we have the worst air quality, but they're not going to allow us to have a waiver in the Clean Air Act to improve our air quality. It's going to make things worse under the SAFE, it's called the SAFE Clean Air Act amendments. So this is especially problematic, and we'll get into some of the particulars. This is pretty quick, so it won't take too long. So that's me. You guys know who I am. So, and you're not taking this for credit, so you don't have to worry about the objectives. But this is important to know that U.S. EPA granted the waiver to California based on the following findings: that our standards were at least as protective as the federal standards, and that they weren't arbitrary and capricious. California standards are needed to meet compelling extraordinary conditions. We lead the nation in auto sales, vehicle sales, and you know, so we happen to have a really huge problem with vehicle emissions. So we do have those. California standards are not inconsistent with certain Clean Air Act provisions. You know, the Clean Air Act just doesn't say thou shalt, you know, install control devices and meet these standards. They do take into consideration cost and timing and those sort of things. So they've been phased in, and we're not expecting something to be developed that there's no technology for. So this is 50 years this has been going on. So this was first established back in 1967. The Clean Air Act, the Federal Clean Air Act, was reauthorized in 1970. That gave EPA the authority to regulate the act and also establish the National Ambient Air Quality Standards at that time. So Congress recognized that we were experiencing significant air pollution problems, as stated, because we had the most vehicle emissions in the nation. And you know, you see all those films where you couldn't see the mountains and couldn't see across the street as a result of uncontrolled emissions from vehicles and no standards whatsoever on motor vehicle emissions. So we've received over 100 waivers over the past 50 years, and none have been revoked. And that's really interesting because there's no method established in law to revoke a waiver. This is uncharted territory. And waivers are granted for specific California regulations that establish emission standards that other emission-related requirements on new motor vehicles or new motor vehicle engines. I should add, too, that California has invested a significant amount of resources into laboratories, testing facilities, and research at universities and the California Air Resources Board, as well as local districts such as the South Coast Air Quality Management District, to test mobile sources and to come up with new technologies for adoption. This also leads to additional money to the state in form of jobs, because these are pioneering achievements that are used throughout the country after they're established here in California. So waiver facts. After California obtains a waiver for these emission standards, Clean Air Act Section 177 allows other states to join in. And so far, we have a number of states, 13 other states that have joined in with us at this time. And I have a listing here. The top three, of course, are California, New York, and New Jersey, but we're also joined by Massachusetts, Vermont, Maine, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Washington State, Oregon State, Maryland, Delaware, and Colorado. So these guys also fail to lose under this revocation of the waiver. And the red states, believe it or not, are not really happy about this either, because it's a states' rights issue. And we're hearing this thing called cooperative federalism from the Trump administration, which says we don't want the feds to be getting into the state's business. But sort of like the air pollution problem, that applying one standard will worsen our air quality at a time when we're being called out for it, that doesn't make sense either. So I just wanted also to give you a little listing of some of the advances that California has led the way with. And this is the development of these major advances. And we're 99% cleaner than we were, cars are 99% cleaner than they were back in the 1970s. And so you see these things like in 1969, we had evaporative emissions. So this was just basic things like requiring tighter fuel caps, and redesign fuel lines to prevent leakage. That was just not addressed. 1973, the catalytic converter was introduced. That was a great emissions control device. And then in 1986, the pesky check engine light, I mean, seems like that's always been there, but that just came into existence, you know, not too long ago. And that was started with the 88 model year, and this was basically a computer capable of detecting whether emission controls were functioning properly or not. And there's a thing called onboard diagnostics that ensued after that as well. 1990, the low emission vehicle standards, and this was for smog-forming emissions from passenger vehicles and some SUVs and pickups for the 1994 to 2003 model years. And then again in 99, this was the low emission vehicle standards 2, and this extended those emission restrictions to include all light duty trucks and SUVs from the 2004 to 2000 model 10 years. We've been getting cleaner and cleaner as we go. And then lastly, we have advanced clean cars. And this is a coordinated greenhouse gas and smog reducing standard requirement for passenger cars, light duty trucks, and some medium duty vehicles to align California national standards for 2017 to 2025. And this is basically the zero emission vehicle program. And you'll see in our next slide why this is so important to us here in California. Few slides. This is just a graphic depiction of the reductions that we've seen over the years with the use of these clean air technologies, from exhaust standards, exhaust gas recirculation device, oxidative catalysts, onboard computers, and oxygen sensors, and we're getting into these zero emission vehicles. So what has this done for us in California and indeed the country? And I'd like to point to a Republican, Ronald Reagan, signed the California Air Resources Board into existence. Its regulations have brought significant benefits to the state, including pollutants have decreased from 75 to 90%, 99% in California, despite a doubling of the population and a quadrupling of vehicle miles traveled. That's huge. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley. You could not see the mountains. We were restricted from playing outside. My throat would burn, my eyes would burn. And you don't see that now, although we're seeing a resurgence of smog episodes in the valley again. But this is also important, probably perhaps most important, 29,000 premature deaths avoided each year. And that accounts for 15% of the total deaths in the state. So that's huge. So this is what I meant by the zero emission. This shows you the standards as we've been trying to achieve concentration over the years that we've tried to get down to the standard. And this is primarily for South Coast. It doesn't reflect what's going on here. But you see that blue box at the bottom. Even if we went with California's proposed standards, we'd still be missing the mark. So that additional bump down, we need to employ a lot more zero emission vehicles to get where we need. And that has nothing to do with climate change, just getting to where we need to get to for ozone. And that should be compelling in and of itself for the Trump administration, but we've got some challenges there. So this is also the other thing, is that climate change will increase smog production. It's hand in hand. The more sunlight and heat you have, the more ozone that's being generated, particularly from nitrogen oxides, as well as volatile organic chemicals that come from operations like wineries. I had to get to there. So there's a clear relationship, and then the federalism standards get more stringent. The impact of rising temperatures will be magnified. So we need to really get to an electric vehicle economy as soon as possible. So this is SAFE, and the SAFE stands for Safer Advanced Fuel Standards. I forget what SAFE stands for, but obviously, here's the logic that's employed. So cutting the standards for emissions will reduce vehicle prices. I would go around the room and have you vote on how many you think that's going to really happen. Do you think that automobile companies that have invested significant resources into producing vehicles are going to say, hey, we don't have to meet the standard as stringently as we would in California, so they're going to drop the price of vehicle? That's not going to happen. Several studies have shown that's not going to happen. So that's sort of one of the inaccuracies, first inaccuracy in the SAFE rule. SAFE rule will save hundreds of lives annually. And so this is also, this could be like a game that you play at the dinner table, but how is that even possible? Where the rational is that cars will be heavier because the only way really to get better emissions and more efficiency is to have lighter vehicles. And that means carbon fiber, advanced composites, and aluminum. The Ford pickup truck, for instance, now is an aluminum body, and that's saving fuel. They're very fuel efficient as a result. So the argument is that the heavier cars will provide more protection during crashes. We have a National Highway Transportation Safety Administration. Just make the car safer. You can do that with advanced composite materials. This argument would say that everybody should drive a Tesla because they're the heaviest cars on the road. So it doesn't make sense. And then this rule really doesn't do anything to make changes in CO2 anyway, so they're sort of saying that it really doesn't matter anyway. And then one of the complaints the feds had against California is we do a lot of trading credits for compliance, so you can buy your way into compliance. These are real reductions. They're not fake. They're verifiable and they're documented. So that's a critique that the administration has of California that just doesn't bear any fruit. And then there was this issue about the Environmental Policy and Conservation Act of 1975 that somehow that blocked California's emission standards program going back to the 70s. So we've been doing this now for 50 years. There's no precedent for that, and there's no language in that law that specifically precludes California for setting its own emission standards. So that's sort of bogus as well. So those are the justifications for this new rule, which, by the way, the waiver, what the administration did, they had this as one big package, but at the last minute, they separated out California's waiver and the SAFE rule. They ran through the waiver. The waiver is a done deal. California is, they're looking at withdrawing our waiver. Now, lawsuits are going to ensue, so we're not sure what's going to happen there. But the Office of Management Budget has not acted on the SAFE emission standards for the rest of the country. So there's still an opening, and we're told at the national level that most of the states are not happy with what EPA is proposing. So that it may not make it all the way. So I titled the slide The Art of War. I sent these letters to you, but this just talked about the highway funding sanctions from Administrator Wheeler at EPA and additional new source review permitting sanctions. That means that if we go to permit a new facility, such as a winery, we may have to have more stringent standards because the vehicles to make up that difference for us to be able to get into compliance, it's going to be unfairly shifted to stationary sources from the mobile source community. And as you should know, mobile sources account for about 70% of the air quality problem. They're about 70% of our emission inventory here in the district. It's higher in some other areas, which goes to Director Ledesma's comment earlier, question. So every district's different. Some meet the standards, others don't. Los Angeles, of course, has a pretty hefty amount of mobile source emissions because the preponderance or the there's a lot of vehicles in their jurisdiction. And then there's also this federal implementation plan. This means the states will write a plan for how your district or your state is going to come into compliance with the Clean Air Act. So they set the milestones. A lot of work for them. EPA has not wanted to do this because it takes so much work. And by the way, as it started in the Obama administration, EPA is really suffering a lack in resources. They are not hiring. They're losing a lot of people. And so they don't have the capacity to take on writing a federal implementation plan for California. So, and then you received this letter as well, and I sent this out to the transportation managers in our jurisdiction as well, but this is requesting the investigation of the possibly unfair tactics, and then set the record straight on the SIP backlog, which is in EPA, not California. And then the other two letters that I mentioned. So that was my presentation. It should be concerning to many states and locals because this sort of shows the administration stepping in to undo things that are really helping improve air quality here. And have we met the standards in some areas? No. And it's probably some of these areas will never meet the standards. San Joaquin, for instance, it's doubtful they'll ever comply with all the Clean Air Act requirements because they live in a dust bowl, and there's very little they're going to be able to do to get that improved. But they have made great strides, as has the rest of California, in addressing pollution from mobile source emissions. So that concludes my presentation.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy to answer any questions.
Just a comment, I want to thank Rich for his presentation and attempt to straighten out our federal government. He might be a presidential candidate in a future opportunity.
Thank you.
Perhaps we should declare ourselves the clean air state, and our region could be the cleanest region in the clean
world.
Proclamation idea.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? We'll take it to the public. Any member of the public? Amen. Okay. Well, this is just no action required, Les?
Correct. I just want to inform the board that a number of the councils for the air districts around the state have been communicating about whether to file a lawsuit or join a lawsuit or be an amicus in another lawsuit. And as those things develop, we'll inform the board and see what the board wants to do in terms of participation.
Okay.
I do have a comment, and that is just, thinking about all this, the clean air standards and the vehicles and so on, it's not something that we regulate at the district level, but I can see how the efforts that this district is engaged in to encourage electric vehicle purchases, the electrification of the charging infrastructure really is part of this effort, and it's something that we can do at the local level. And if there are other things that we should be thinking about, I hope you'll...
Thank you for that. One, and I didn't fail to mention this on the presentation to the Bar Association, but the two chargers I talked about earlier, the solar-powered battery backup chargers, those are the first in the nation. So we're showing that not only is California pioneering technologies, but this district is involved in leading the effort. And we're already seeing that these technologies are going to be employed down in Paso Robles and other areas throughout the state. So this is huge, and we really, if we don't have the standards to drive the technology change here, then all this money is going to be stranded and wasted. So it's of particular importance at this time.
Thank you for your efforts. Okay. Seeing no other questions or comments on this, that's the end of our business. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
And who's second?
Second.
All right. We stand adjourned.
Wow. Chris, what's up, man?
Oh, good to see you, brother. That's a good work with you.
Yeah.